The Personal History of David Copperfield by Charles Dickens.
In language rules excess imparts the power they feel so well. There may perhaps in such a scene some recollection be.
Part 9. My beloved Dora.
Of days that heaven's happy been, and you'll remember me.
My dear sir, the distinguished elevation to which your talents have raised you deters me from presuming to aspire to take the liberty of addressing the companion of my youth by the familiar appellation of Copperfield. It is not for one situated as is the foundered bark to adopt the language of compliment or congratulation. This he leaves to abler and to purer hands. May I be permitted to observe that my peace is shattered, my power of enjoyment destroyed, my heart is no longer in the right place, and I no more walk erect before my fellow men. It is my intention to fly from myself for a short period, to visit some metropolitan scenes of past enjoyment. My feet will naturally tend towards the King's Bench Prison. In stating that I shall be outside the south wall of that place of incarceration the day after tomorrow at 7 in the evening, my object in this epistolary communication is accomplished. I do not feel warranted in soliciting my former friend Mr. Copperfield and my former friend Mr. Thomas Traddles to condescend to meet me. I confine myself to throwing out the observation that at the hour and place I have indicated may be found such ruined vestiges as yet remain of a fallen tower. Wilkins Micawber. P.S. Mrs. Micawber is not in possession of my intentions.
Mr. Traddles,
sir.
My dear Copperfield, you are friends in need and friends indeed. Allow me to inquire about the physical welfare of Mrs. Copperfield.
Dora is not so well, I'm afraid. She's convalescing. We lost our first child.
Oh, I am distressed to hear that. Let us hope that the fecundity that has blessed my own union will one day be enjoyed by yours, my dear Copperfield.
And how is your family? And how is Mrs. Micawber?
Thank you. She is but so-so. And this, my friends, is the King's Bench Prison. The bench, where there was no knocker on the door for any creditor to appeal to, and detainers were merely lodged at the gate. When I was an inmate of this place, I could look my fellow man in the face and punch his head if he offended me. My fellow man and myself are no longer on such glorious terms.
Oh, you are in low spirits, Mr. Micawber.
I am, sir.
How is our friend Heap?
Whatever his state of health may be, his appearance is foxy, not to say diabolical. Forgive me. I decline to pursue a subject that has lashed me to the verge of desperation.
Then may I ask how my old friends Mr. and Miss Wickfield are?
Miss Wickfield is the only starry spot in a miserable existence. My respect for that young lady, my admiration of her character, her love, her truth.
Oh, my dear fellow.
Take me down a side street, for on my soul, in my present state of mind, I am not equal to this.
Oh, come, Mr. Micawber. Ride out of hiding. I'll introduce you to my aunt, and you can make us a glass of your own punch and forget whatever it is you have on your mind. Or confide it to us, if that will relieve you.
Gentlemen, I am a straw on the surface of the deep, and am tossed in all directions by the elephants. I beg your pardon, I should have said elements. But thank you, Copperfield, I accept. I accept. Gratitude.
You are a very old friend of my nephew's, I know, Mr. Micawber. I wish I had had the pleasure of seeing you before.
Madam, I wish I'd had the honor of knowing you at an earlier period. I was not always the wreck you at present behold.
Here you are, Mr. Micawber. Lemons, sugar, rum, and a kettle just boiled. Mr. Micawber makes a splendid bowl of punch, aunt.
I've no doubt he does. I hope Mrs. Micawber and your family are well, sir?
They are as well, ma'am, as aliens and outcasts can ever hope to be.
Oh, Lord bless you, sir. What are you talking about?
The subsistence of my family, ma'am, trembles in the balance.
Mr. Micawber?
My employer, Mr. Heap, once observed that if I were not in receipt of the stipendiary emoluments appertaining to my engagement with him, I should probably be a mountebank about the country, swallowing a sword blade and eating the devouring element. For anything that I can perceive to the contrary, it is still probable that my children may be reduced to seek a livelihood by personal contortion, while Mrs. Micawber abets their unnatural feats by playing on the barrel organ.
Mr. Micawber, you're trying to pour water from a candlestick.
My dear Copperfield, this is an occupation above all others, requiring an untroubled mind and self-respect. I cannot perform it. It is out of the question.
My dear sir, what is the matter?
Speak out. You're among friends.
Villainy is the matter. Baseness is the matter. Deception, fraud, conspiracy are the matter. And the name of the whole atrocious mass is Hape.
I knew it!
The struggle is over. I will lead this life no longer. Give me back my wife. Give me back my family. Substitute Micawber for the petty wretch who walks about in the boots at present on my feet. And call upon me to swallow a sword tomorrow, and I'll do it. With an appetite.
Mr. Micawber, come, sit down. Let me get...
I shall partake of no man's hospitality till I have moved Mount Vesuvius to erupt upon the abominable rascal Heap. Refreshment under this roof would choke me, unless I had previously choked the eyes out of the head of interminable cheat, liar, and hypocrite.
With the last repetition of this magic word, he rushed out of the house. Later, a note was brought from a neighbouring tavern, requesting us all to meet that day week at a small hotel in Canterbury.
Whereafter, the act of reparation performed, which can alone enable me to contemplate my fellow mortal, I shall be known no more. Wilkins Micawber.
About a fortnight after this, on the second evening in Mr. Micawber's week of suspense, I was walking alone in the garden when I saw a woman's figure in the road before the house, beckoning to me.
Martha!
Can you come with me? I've been to Mr. Peggotty, but he weren't in. I wrote down where he were to come and left it on his table. I have news. Can you come?
Of course.
Listen, you sir.
Martha?
Yes. Yes, hurry.
We hurried along a dark street of poor lodging houses. We went into one of these and began to climb the common staircase.
Is somebody downstairs?
As we climbed to the top story, I saw ahead of us a female figure. She paused for a second at a door, then she turned the handle and went in.
Move in here where you can stay without being seen.
We were in a small, empty garret with a sloping roof. The back door to Martha's room was slightly open. I could not see Miss Dartle, for hers was the figure we had glimpsed, nor could I see the person she was addressing. But we could hear. Oh, yes. We could hear.
It matters little that she's not at home.
I know nothing of her. It's you I came to see.
May?
Yes, I've come to look at you. You're not ashamed of the face that has done so much, are you? I've come to see James Steerforth's fancy. The girl who ran away with him and is the town talk of the commonest people of her native place. The bold, flaunting, practiced companion of people like James Steerforth.
Please,
stay there. Stay, or I'll proclaim you to the house and the whole street. If you try to escape me, I'll stop you if it's by the hair.
Where was Mr. Peggotty? It was for him to find her. For him to save her.
So, I see her at last. Why, he was a poor creature to be taken in by that delicate mock modesty. That hanging head.
For heaven's sake, spare me! Whoever you are, you know my wretched story. Spare me, if you'd be spared yourself.
If I'd be spared, what is there in common between us?
Nothing but our sex.
Our sex? You're an honor to our sex.
Oh, you deserve this. But that's dreadful. Dear lady, think what I've suffered and how I'm fallen. Have some mercy on me. Give me some compassion or I shall die mad.
Do you know what you've done? Do you ever think of the home you've laid waste?
Oh, is there ever night or day when I don't think of it? Have there been a single minute when that hadn't been before me, as it used to be when I turned my back upon it forever and ever?
The miserable vanity of these earthworms. Your home. Do you imagine I give a thought to it? Or suppose you could do any harm to that low place which money wouldn't pay for, and handsomely? Your home. You were a part of the trade in your home, and were bought and sold like any other vendable thing.
No! No! Say anything of me, but never you visit my shame on folks who are as honourable as you. Do you have some respect for him if you have no mercy for me?
I speak of his home, where I live. Here's a worthy cause of division between lady mother and gentleman son. A worthy cause of grief in a house where you wouldn't have been admitted as a kitchen girl.
No. When he first come in my way, I'd been brought up as virtuous as you or any lady. And we're going to be the wife of as good a man as you or any lady in the world can ever marry. If you live in his house and know him, you know, perhaps, what his power with a weak, vain girl might be. I don't defend myself, but I know, and he knows, or will know when he come to die and his mind is troubled with it, that he used all his powers to deceive me, and that I believed him. Trusted him and loved him.
You love him. You tell that to me. Why don't they whip these creatures?
If I could order it to be done, I'd have this girl whipped to death.
She loved that carrion, and she'll tell me he cared for her. The liars these traders are. You'd better seek that home of yours with all speed and hide your head among those excellent people whom your money will console. When it's all gone, you can believe and trust and love again, you know. I thought you were a broken toy, a worthless spangle that was tarnished and thrown away. But finding you true gold, a lady, an ill-used innocent witch you look like, I have something more to say. Attend to it. For what I say, I'll do. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Hide yourself. Let it be somewhere beyond reach, in some obscure life, or better still, in some obscure death. I wonder if your loving heart won't break that you found no way of helping it to be still. I have heard of such means. I believe they're easily found. I can't breathe freely in the air you breathe. Therefore, I'll have it cleansed. If you live here tomorrow, I'll have your story and your character proclaimed on the common staircase. If you seek refuge in this town, in any character but your true one, which you're welcome to bear, the same service shall be done you.
Oh,
me. Oh, May, what shall I do?
Do consecrate your existence to the memory of James Steerforth's tenderness. Or if those memories will not sustain you, die. There are doorways and dust heaps for such deaths and such despair. Find one and take your flight to heaven.
I heard a distant foot upon the stairs. Mr. Peggotty.
But, Mark, I am resolved, for reasons that I have and hatreds that I entertain, to cast you out unless you withdraw from my sight altogether or drop your pretty mask. This is what I had to say, and what I say I mean to do.
The foot upon the stairs came nearer, passed Rosa Dartle as she went out, rushed into the room.
Oh, God!
Emily!
Mr. Peggotty! Oh, thank God.
Yes, Master Davy. I thank my Heavenly Father as my dreams come true. I thank him heartily for having guided me in his own way to my darling.
He took her up in his arms and carried her, motionless and unconscious, down the stairs.
Thank God, sir. My niece is found.
She will stay with you for a time?
That she will. I've been long preparing for her and waiting for her.
And what of the future? Have you made up your mind?
That I have. And told Emily, there's mighty countries far from here. Our future life lies over the sea.
You'll emigrate?
Yes. I were at the docks early this morning. In 6 weeks from now, there'll be a ship, and we'll go with her. No one can't reproach my darling in Australia.
Will you two go alone?
Aye. My sister's that fond of you and yourn. That wouldn't hardly be fair to let her go. Besides, as one she has in charge, as don't ought to be forgot.
Poor Ham.
Aye. Poor fellow. There ain't so much left him that he could spare the little as he has. Tomorrow, I go to Yarmouth to see what needs a doing down there. I'd most like to take my leave of him.
Would you wish me to go along with you?
Oh, if you could do me that kind favour, sir. I know the sight of you would cheer him up a bit.
Dora, being in good spirits and anxious that I should go, I undertook to accompany him. We were in Yarmouth the following night. I was reluctant to be present when he first met his sister and Ham, so I decided to call on Mr. Omer, and remembering his interest in Emily, I told him what had happened.
Oh, that's the best news I've heard for many a day, sir. Oh, yes. Yeah, by stars. What's going to be done for that unfortunate young woman, Martha?
I can't tell you yet, but I'm sure Mr. Peggotty hasn't forgotten her.
Oh, of course, whatever is done, I'd wish to be a member of. Oh, yes. Do you put me down for anything you may consider right, and let me know.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, you know, sir, I see more of the world in this here chair than ever I see out of it. You'd be surprised at the number of people that looks in of a day to have a chat. There's twice as much in the newspaper as there used to be. And as to general reading, oh, my heart alive, what a lot I get through. And since I've took to reading, you've took to writing, eh, sir? What a lovely work that were of yours.
Oh.
I read every word, every word. And as to feeling sleepy, oh, not at all.
I expressed my satisfaction, but I must confess, I found this association of ideas significant. After a stroll about the town, I went to Ham's house, where I found Peggotty alone.
Oh, Master Davy. Master Davy, thank God she's been found. Thank God that'll save her.
Thank God indeed. Is Ham not home, Peggotty?
Oh, he's just stepped out to take a turn on the beach.
How is he?
He don't show it much, but I believe he's broken hearted. Sometimes he talk of old times in the boathouse, and then he speak of Emily as a child, but he don't speak of her as a woman. Never.
Master Davy!
My old friend.
Why, sir, that's good to see you. Aunt was down in the boathouse, making ready to leave for her.
Yes, I know. You'll miss him.
That we will. But he'll write to us. We'll have his letters. And maybe he'll get rich in the new country. You staying there for long, sir?
Just a few days.
I'll see to your room, Davy.
I'd take it kindly if we could have a few words about it all. But not here, no, not now.
I understand. Can we meet tomorrow, in the evening?
Yes. Will you wait for me on the beach? By the old boat.
I shall be there.
Mass Davy.
Ham.
Twas about her. Shall you see her, do you think?
It would be too painful for her, perhaps.
So twas.
But, Ham, if there's anything I could write to her for you, if there's anything you wish to make known to her through me...
Oh, thank you, sir. Most kind. I think there is something I could wish said or wrote.
What is it?
Ain't that I forgive her? Ain't that so much? Tis more as I beg of her to forgive me for having pressed my affections on her. Odd times I think that if I hadn't had a promise for her to marry me, she was that trustful of me in a friendly way, she'd have told me what was struggling in her mind and would have counseled with me, and I might have saved her.
I will tell her. Is there anything else?
Yes. If I can say it, I loved her. And I love the memory of her. Too deep to be able to lead her to believe of her own self that I'm a happy man. I could only be happy by forgetting of her, and I'm afraid I couldn't hardly bear if she should be told I'd done that. But if you, being so full of learning, could think of anything to say as might bring her to believe I weren't greatly hurt, still loving her and mourning for her, anything as might ease her sorrowful mind and yet not make her think as I could ever marry. Or anyone could be to me what she was. I should ask of you to say that with my prayers for hers was so dear.
I will try to do that, Ham.
Thank you, sir. Oh, 'twas kind of you to bear him company here. I'm not like to see him again. We don't say so, but so 'twill be, and that's so. The last you see on him, the very last, will you give him the lovingest duty and thanks of the orphan he was more than a father to?
I will.
Oh, thank you, sir. You'll see them at the boathouse now?
Yes.
I won't go with you. I can't go there no more.
I understand. Goodbye, then.
Goodbye, sir. God bless you.
Come according to promise to bid farewell to the old boat, eh, Master Davy? Fair enough now, isn't it?
It's fair indeed. You've made good use of your time.
Oh, we haven't been idle. I don't know what Mrs. Gummidge worked like.
Donald.
Yes, Mother.
My dear Donald, The parting words I speak in this here house is I mustn't be left behind.
Mother, you
know... Don't he think of leaving me behind. Oh, Donald, don't he ever do it.
My good soul.
Take me along with you. with you and Emily. But I'd be your servant, constant and true. But if there's slaves in them parts, I'll be bound to you for one and be happy. But don't even leave me behind, Donald. There's a dirty day.
Oh, you don't know what a long voyage, what a hard life it is.
Yes, that I do. And if you don't take me, I shall go into the house and die. Oh. I can take, I can work, I can live hard. I can be loving and patient now if you'll only try me. I know you think I'm blown and lorn, but Terry loved him so no more. I ain't sat here so long a-watching and a-thinking of your trials without some good being done me. And I knows your ways and Emily's, and I know your sorrows and can be a comfort at times. Oh, Donald, dearie Donald, let me go along with you.
Well, well, me old mother. If so be as that's what you wish, you come with us and welcome.
Oh, Daniel, God bless you.
We put the candle out, fastened the door on the outside, and left the old boat, a dark speck in the cloudy night. And now Mr. Micawber's mystery week was at an end. We were disposed to leave my aunt at home to look after Dora, allowing Mr. Dick and me to represent her in Canterbury. But Dora wouldn't hear of it.
I won't speak to you, Aunt Betsy.
Oh.
I'll make Dick bark at you all day. I'll be sure you really are a cross old thing if you don't go.
Oh, Blossom, you know you can't do without me.
Yes, I can. You're no use to me at all.
Oh, gracious.
You never run up and down stairs for me all day long.
Blossom.
You never sit and tell me stories about Dodie when he was a little boy with his shoes worn out or covered with dust. You never do anything to please me, do you?
Oh, my dear.
Yes, you do, Aunt. I'm only teasing you. But you must go. Why shouldn't you both go, Dodie? I'm not very ill, am I?
What a question!
What a fancy!
I know, I'm silly. Well, then, you must go.
So we agreed that we'd both go, and that Dora was a little impostor, who pretended not to be well because she liked to be petted. She was very pleased by this, and very merry. And we four, my aunt, Mr. Dick, Traddles and I, went down to Canterbury by the Dover Mail. Next morning, at the first chime of the half hour, Mr. Micawber appeared.
Gentlemen and madam, good morning.
This is Mr. Dick, Mr. Micawber, an old and dear friend.
I am delighted to make his acquaintance.
Have you breakfasted, sir? Have a chop.
No, sir, not for the world. Appetite and myself have long been strangers, Mr. Dixon.
Dick, attention.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Now, sir, we are ready for Mount Vesuvius or anything else, as soon as you please.
Madam, I trust you will shortly witness an eruption.
Good heavens.
Mr. Traddles, I believe I have your permission to mention that we have been in communication.
Of course. Mr. Micawber has consulted me, Copperfield, and I have advised him to the best of my judgment.
Unless I deceive myself, Mr. Traddles, what I contemplate is a disclosure of an important nature.
Oh, highly so.
Perhaps under such circumstances, madam and gentlemen, you will do me the honor to submit yourselves to the direction of one who, however unworthy to be regarded in any other light but as waif and stray, is still your fellow man.
Perfect confidence in you, Mr. Micawber, and we'll do as you please.
Mr. Copperfield, I would beg to be allowed a start of 5 minutes by the clock, and then to receive the present company inquiring for Miss Wickfield at the office of Wickfield and Heap, whose stipendiary I am. For the moment, farewell.
How do you do, Mr. Micawber?
Mr. Copperfield, I hope I see you well.
Is Miss Wickfield at home?
Yes. Mr. Wickfield is unwell in bed, sir, have a rheumatic fever.
Oh.
But I have no doubt Miss Wickfield will be happy to see old friends. Will you walk, sir? This way. Miss Trotwood, Mr. David Copperfield, Mr. Thomas Traddles,
and Mr. Dixon.
Well, I'm sure this is an unexpected pleasure. Mr. Copperfield, I hope I see you well, and if I may humbly express myself so, friendly towards them as is ever your friend. Miss Trotwood, things are changed in this office since I was a numble clerk and held your pony, ain't they? But I am not changed.
Sir, I think you're pretty consistent to the promise of your youth, if that's any satisfaction to you.
Thank you, Miss Trotwood, for your good opinion. Micawber, tell him to let Miss Agnes know. And Mother. Mother will be in quite a state when she sees the present company.
You aren't busy, Mr. Heath?
No, Mr. Traddles. Not so much as I could wish. But lawyers, sharks and leeches are not easily satisfied, you know. Not but what myself and Micawber have our hands full in general on account of Mr. Wickfield being hardly fit for any occupation, but it's a pleasure as well as a duty to work for him. You've not been intimate with Mr. Wickfield, I think, Mr. Traddles? I've only had the honour of seeing you once myself.
No, I haven't been intimate with Mr. Wickfield, or I might have waited on you long ago, Mr. Heap.
Huh? I'm sorry for that, Mr. Traddles. You'd have admired him as much as we all do. His little failings would only have endeared him to you the more. Oh, Miss Agnes, we have friends here, as you see.
Miss Trotwood.
My dear.
Mr. Dick.
At your service, ma'am.
How are you, my dear?
I am well, thank you. Trot, how good to see you. Mr. Traddles, how are you? And Sophie?
We're both in the best of health, thank you, Miss Whittle. Will you excuse me?
Trot, how is Dora?
She's very cheerful. I have a letter for you.
Don't wait, Micawber. I told you not to wait. Did you hear me?
Yes.
Then why do you wait?
Because, in short, I choose to.
You're a dissipated fellow. All the world knows that, and I'm afraid you'll oblige me to get rid of you. Go along. I'll talk to you presently.
If there's a scoundrel on this earth with whom I've already talked too much, that scoundrel's name is Heath.
This is a conspiracy. You've met here by appointment. Have you, Copperfield? Take care. You'll make nothing of this. We understand each other, you and me. There's no love between us.
At last you've spoken the truth, Uriah. At least in one particular. Mr. Micawber, deal with him as he deserves.
You're a precious set of people, ain't you, to buy over my clerk, who's the scum of society, as you were yourself, Copperfield, before anyone had charity on you. To defame me with his lies. Miss Trotwood, you'd better stop this, or I'll stop your husband shorter than will be pleasant to you.
What?
I won't know your story professionally for nothing, old lady. Miss Wickfield, if you've any love for your father, don't join that gang, or I'll ruin him. Now come, I've got some of you under the harrow. Think twice before it goes over you.
Mrs. Heath, this here, sir. I've taken the liberty of making myself known to
her. Who are you to make yourself known?
I am the agent and friend of Mr. Wickfield, sir. I've obtained a power of attorney for him, and I had it in my pocket.
The old ass has drunk himself into a state of dotage. It has been got from him by fraud.
Something has been got from him by fraud, I know. And so do you, Mr. Heath. We'll refer that question to Mr. Micawber.
Hold your tongue, Mother. Will you hold your tongue and leave it to me? Copperfield, do you think it justifiable, you who pride yourself so much on your honour and all the rest of it, to sneak about my place eavesdropping with my clerk? You don't think of what I shall do in return. Very well, we shall see. Mr. What's your name? You are going to refer some question to Micawber. Why don't you make him speak?
Dear Miss Trotwood and gentlemen, in appearing before you to denounce probably the most consummate villain that has ever existed, I ask no consideration for myself. The victim, from my cradle, of pecuniary liabilities to which I have been unable to respond, I have ever been the sport and toy of debasing circumstances. Ignominy, want, despair and madness have, collectively or separately, been the attendants of my career. In an accumulation of ignominy, want, despair and madness, I entered the office of the firm nominally conducted under the appellation of Wickfield and Heap, but in reality wielded by Heap alone. Heap and only Heap is the mainspring of that machine. Heap and only Heap is the forger and the cheat.
Give me that.
Indeed, I will not, sir. But this you may have.
The devil take you. I'll be even with you.
Approach me again. You. You. Heap of infamy. And if your head is human, I'll break it. Hark to this. The stipendiary emoluments, in consideration of which I entered into the service of Heap, were not defined beyond the pittance of 22 shillings and 6 per week. The rest was left contingent on the value of my professional exertions. In other words, the baseness of my nature, the cupidity of my motives, the poverty of my family, and the general moral, or rather immoral, resemblance between myself and Heap. Need I say, it soon became necessary for me to solicit pecuniary advances towards the support of Mrs. Micawber and my family. Need I say that those advances were secured by IOUs and similar legal acknowledgements, and that I thus became enmeshed in the web that Heap had spun for my reception. Then it was that my services were called in for the falsification of business and the mystification of an individual I will designate as Mr. W. Mr. W. was imposed upon, kept in ignorance, and deluded in every possible way. Yet all this while the ruffian, Heap, was professing gratitude and friendship to this much-abused gentleman. My object, when the contest within myself between stipend and no stipend ceased, was to discover and expose the major wrongs committed against Mr. W. by Heap. Stimulated by the silent monitor within and a no less appealing monitor without, to whom I will briefly refer as Miss W., I entered on a not unlaborious task of clandestine investigation. My charges against Heap are as follows.
Oh, never, never, not my Yuri.
First, when Mr. W.'s faculties and memory for business became weakened and confused, Heap deliberately complicated the whole of the official transaction. When Mr. W. was least fit to enter into business, Heap was always on hand to force him into it. He obtained Mr. W.'s signature to documents of importance, representing them as documents of no importance. He induced Mr. W. to empower him to draw out one particular sum of trust money and employed it to meet pretended business charges which had never really existed. He gave this proceeding the appearance of originating in Mr. W.'s own dishonest intention and has used it ever since to torture him.
You shall prove this, you, Copperfield, if you can.
Mrs. Meadows, ask Heap, who lived in his house after him.
The fool himself, and lives there now.
Ask him if he ever kept a pocketbook in that house, or if he ever burnt one there. If he says yes, and asks you where the ashes are, refer him to Wilkins Micawber, and he will hear something not at all to his advantage.
You'll be humble and make terms.
Mother, will you be quiet? You're in a fright and don't know what you're saying. Humble. I've humbled some of them for a pretty long time back. Humble as I was.
Second, Heap has, on several occasions, to the best of my knowledge, information and belief,
that won't do.
We will endeavour to find something that will do. And do for you, sir, finally, very shortly. Second, Heap has, on several occasions, to the best of my knowledge, information, and belief, systematically forged to various entries, books, and documents the signature of Mr. W. And has distinctly done so in one instance capable of proof by me. A bond which he proposed to put forward as a sum advanced by him to save Mr. W. from dishonor has signatures to this instrument purporting to have been executed by Mr. W. and witnessed by Wilkins Macomber. They are forgeries. Oh,
no.
By him. Oh. I never attested any such document. I have in my possession, in Heap's hand and pocketbook, several similar imitations of Mr. W.'s signature. And I have the document itself in my possession. That is, I had it till early this morning. I have now relinquished it to Mr. Traddles.
Quite true.
Fury, be humble and make terms. I know my son will be humble, gentlemen, if you give him time to think.
Mother, you'd have done better to fire a loaded gun at my head.
I love you, Fury, and I can't bear to hear you provoking the gentleman. I told that gentleman there that I'd answer for your being humble and making amends. And, see how humble I am, gentlemen. Don't mind.
Copperfield would have given you £100 to say less than you've blurted out.
God help me, Fury. I can't see you running into danger through carrying your head so high. Better be humble as you always was.
What more have you got to bring forward, if anything? Get on with it.
Third and last, I'm now in a condition to show by Heap's false books that Mr. W. has for years been deluded and plundered by Heap, that the object of Heap was to subdue Mr. and Miss W. entirely to himself. His last act was to induce Mr. W. to relinquish his share in the partnership for a certain annuity to be paid by Heap.
We'll see about that, Micawber. There's a law against slander, you know. What? Huh? Where are the books? Some thief has stolen the books.
I did, when you gave me the key this morning.
Don't be alarmed, Mr. Heap. I have them. I'll take good care of them.
You receive stolen goods, do you?
Under such circumstances, yes.
Well, Copperfield, are you satisfied? What do you want done?
I'll tell you what must be done.
Has Copperfield no tongue?
First, the deed of relinquishment must be given to me now. Here.
Suppose I haven't got it.
But you have, so we won't suppose so. Then you must disgorge all your greed has gained you and make reparation to the last farthing. All the partnership books and papers must stay in our possession. All money, accounts and securities. In short, everything here.
I must have time to think about that.
Certainly. In the meantime, we shall keep them. And you must keep your room and communicate with no one.
I won't do it.
Maidstone Jail is a safe place of detention. And though the law may be longer in writing us, there's no doubt of its punishing you. Copperfield, will you be so good as to go to the guild hall and bring a couple of officers?
Oh, no. Oh, Miss Whitfield, dear Miss Whitfield, tell him not to do any such thing. It's all true, but he's very humble, and if he won't do what you want, I will.
Stop.
I will.
Mother, hold your noise. Let him have that deed. Go and fetch it.
Help her, Mr. Dick. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, indeed. Oh, come, Mrs. Deep.
Oh, you're
Copperfield, I've always hated you. You've always been an upstart, and you've always been against me.
And in your greed and cunning, you've always been against the world. Greed and cunning always overreach themselves. It's as sure as death.
Or as sure as they used to teach at school from 9 to 11 that labour was a curse, and from 11 to 1 that it was a blessing and a dignity, and I don't know what. You preach about as consistent as they did. Won't humbleness go down? I shouldn't have got round my gentleman fellow partner without it, I think. Micawber, out.
pay you.
Mr. Copperfield, evil is defeated and right has triumphed. I am a man again. Might I persuade you to do me the honor of attending me to my present domicile, to witness the re-establishment of mutual confidence between myself and Mrs. Micawber? The veil that has long been interposed between us is now withdrawn, and my children and the author of their being can once more come into contact on equal terms. Emma, my love, I have returned.
Oh, Micawber, husband.
The cloud has passed from my mind. Mutual confidence so long preserved between us is restored.
Oh, Micawber.
Now, welcome poverty.
Oh.
Welcome misery. Welcome houselessness.
Oh.
Welcome hunger and rags, tempest and beggary. Mutual confidence will sustain us to the end.
Mrs. Micawber, I'm delighted to see you. My aunt, Miss Betsy Trotwood, Mrs. Micawber.
Oh, ma'am, I'm honored.
And may I present Mr. Dick?
Yes, yes.
Dick, attention. Ma'am, we are all very grateful to your husband.
Oh, I'm glad. Oh, forgive me, but I'm not strong. And the removal of the late misunderstanding between Mr. Micawber and myself is almost too much for me.
Oh, of course, my dear Mrs. Micawber. I had not realized the extent of Mr. Micawber's family commitment. I wonder you have never turned your thoughts to emigration.
Madam, it was the dream of my youth and the fallacious aspiration of my riper years.
Why, what a thing it would be for yourselves and your family, Mr. and Mrs. Micawber, if you were to emigrate now.
Oh. Capital, madam. That is the difficulty.
Capital? But you have done us a great service. What could we do for you that would be half so good as to find the capital?
Mr. Rotwood, I could not receive it as a gift. But if a sufficient sum could be advanced, say at 4% interest per annum upon my personal liability, say my notes of hand, at 12, 18, and 24 months respectively, to allow time for something to turn up...
Can be and shall be on your own terms. We can see to that, can't we, Trotwood?
Indeed we can. I've been fortunate these last years, Mr. Micawber, as you know.
Some people Trotwood knows are going out to Australia shortly. Why shouldn't you go in the same ship? Oh, think about it.
There is but one question, my dear ma'am, I could wish to ask.
Mm-hmm.
The climate, I believe, is healthy.
Oh, finest in the world.
Just so. Then my question arises. Are the circumstances of the country such that a man of Mr. Micawber's abilities would have a fair chance of rising in the social scale? I will not say at present mighty aspire to governor, but would there be a reasonable opening for his talents to develop themselves?
No better opening anywhere for a man who conducts himself well and is industrious.
For a man who conducts himself well and is industrious? Precisely. It is evident to me that Australia is the legitimate sphere of action for Mr. Micawber.
Shall I ever forget how, in a moment, he was the most sanguine of men? Or how Mrs. Micawber presently discoursed about the habits of the kangaroo? But I must pause now, as other memories fade, and a figure comes forward, quiet and still, saying, "Stop to think of me, turn to look upon the blossom as it flutters to the ground."
There, Jip. Let my hair loose, Dodie. I'm tired of having it in a net now.
Yes, my darling. There.
I remember how you asked me for a lock of it soon after we first met. You said it was beautiful.
And so it is still. That was the day I told you how much in love I was.
Yes, it was.
Daddy?
Yes, dearest?
Are you lonely when you go downstairs now?
How can I not be when I see your empty chair?
You truly miss me. Even stupid me.
My heart. Who is there on earth I could miss so much?
I'm so glad. Yet so sorry. Give Agnes my dear love. And tell her I want very much to see her. And I've nothing left to wish for.
Except to get well again.
Oh, Dodie. Sometimes I think that will never be.
Oh, don't say so, dearest love. Don't think so.
I'm going to say something I've often thought of. You won't mind.
Mind, my darling?
Because I don't know what you'll think. Dodie, dear, I'm afraid I was too young.
Dora, my heart.
I don't mean in years only. I was such a silly little creature. I'm afraid it would have been better if we only loved each other as a boy and girl. I've begun to think I wasn't fit to be a wife.
Oh, Dora, love. As fit as I am to be a husband.
But you're very clever. And I never was.
We've been very happy, my sweet Dora.
I was very happy, yes. But as years went on, my boy would have wearied of his child wife.
No.
It's better as it is.
Dora, dearest, don't speak like that. Every word seems a reproach.
Oh, no. I loved you far too well to say a reproachful word to you in earnest. And you never deserved it. Don't cry. Hush. Hush. I want to speak to Agnes. When you go downstairs, tell her so. I want to speak to her quite alone.
I'll tell her.
Oh, Dodie. After more years, you never could have loved me better. And I might have so tried and disappointed you that you wouldn't have loved me half so well. It is better as it is.
Agnes is with her now. I sit by the fire, thinking with a blind remorse of the secret feelings I've had since my marriage. I think of every little trifle between me and Dora, and feel the truth that trifles make the sum of life. Jip, you want to go upstairs? Not tonight. No, not tonight. No, Jip. It may be never again. Poor little dog. Chip. Oh, Chip. No, not you. Agnes, look. Little Chip,
Agnes. No. No. That face, so full of pity and of grief. That rain of tears. That solemn hand upraised towards heaven. It is over. Darkness comes before my eyes, and for a time, all things are blotted out of my remembrance.
Of David Copperfield by Charles Dickens featured Gary Cady, Miriam Margolyes, Sheila Hancock, David Bamber, Maggie McCarthy, Joanna Myers, and David Burke, with Mary Wimbush, Jenny Howe, Jane Whittenshaw, Maria Miles, Mark Straker, Phil Daniels, Maria Charles, and Timothy Spall. Also, Ajoa Ando, Ronald Herdman, Peter Tudnam, and Peter Penry Jones. The book was dramatised by Betty Davis, and the producer was Marilyn Imrie.